Hey, it's me, Richie T, and this episode of The Cultural Hall is, well, you're going to hear another intro here in a second because we recorded this a little while ago. So this is like the prelude. This is like your first chapter and first verse of this episode. I just need to let you know that in this episode, we refer to purplerms.com, and that's not anymore what this organization is called. Now you can find all the same information. It's all the same group, but without all the conflict, at sickrms.com. That's sickrms.com. But should you happen to go to Purple Heart RMs, it'll just redirect you to sickrms.com. So there, enjoy this episode.
It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 105. It's the Purple Heart RMs.
Yay, and Purple Heart RMs.
And the LDS psychiatrist. Is your voice okay? Is it going to sound like that this whole time?
No, I just had to drink some water. Yeah. I've been under the weather the last week or so.
Well, good. Make sure and get right close on that microphone and touch as many things as you can
in
this room.
Well, you know what I'll do is I'll dip it in Purell once we're done.
Good.
So whoever uses it.
You didn't sound like that when I saw you on Saturday night.
Well, you know, it's the morning. You know, you're a little bit more gruff.
It's 11:30.
Well, yeah.
It's your morning?
Yeah, it's my morning. I decided to sleep in.
Good for you.
We watched some movies last night.
Oh.
Sunday night, you know.
Yeah?
You know, Monday morning? Yeah. We don't dread Monday mornings.
That's because you guys don't work early in the morning on Monday morning.
Exactly. It's great.
My wife and I, however, at 8:30 last night went, man, we should probably just end this day because we have to get up super early.
Yeah. And we went to Springville last week, and I remember you had to make that drive from Springville
to downtown Salt Lake.
Yeah.
It's about an hour.
Ugh.
What were you doing down in Springville?
I did a little event called Slash Bash. It's
okay.
When Halloween, it's on November 1st. It's done by a company called Eli Kirk, and they bring out a bunch of pumpkins,
mm-hmm.
and we destroy them. It's a celebration of destroying pumpkins. It's really cool. Yeah.
How destructive.
Yeah. So they have tons of different stations. You know, baseball bat station where you can throw a pumpkin at a baseball. You can get a baseball bat. People throw pumpkins at you with a katana, golf club, paintballs. People have a catapult station. Tons of different stations where you can destroy pumpkins. And then they have a grand finale where they destroy big pumpkins and set them on fire and things like that.
Did they break a van with it?
No, they actually broke a trailer.
Oh, cool.
Trailer, like an old school trailer.
Happy Halloween. We're destroying stuff with pumpkins. Yay!
Yay! Happy November. So there you go.
Did you have a good Halloween?
Yeah. This was interesting. This Halloween, I didn't have any like nieces or nephews in town. And
good riddance.
I know, seriously. And I didn't have a gig. So we decided to stay at home and mm-hmm. decorate the house.
Yeah, I saw that.
So we decorated the house.
We should put a picture on this episode with that.
Really?
The guy hanging out of the window. I thought that was fun.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my DJs suggested it. She's like, hey, you should have some guy hanging out your window. So I thought that was funny. And so with minimal amount of decorations, we just lit up the house. When we say we, it was just me. My wife.
The wife of the party didn't do it?
No.
It would seem to me that she would get into that kind of stuff.
No, she dressed up. I did the whole thing. I decorated the whole house.
Oh, you're going to be a great homemaker.
Yeah. So, yeah, and she posted that on the wall, on the mirror. She always, like, writes messages on the mirror.
Uh-huh.
She's like, my husband decorated the house and took the decorations down all on his own. Best husband ever. She
oh, really?
Writes stuff like that.
That'll turn into passive-aggressive notes as time goes on.
My husband didn't flush the toilet and left the seat up.
Best husband ever. No, it'll always remain best husband ever.
He'll be passive aggressive. Yeah. So she does it that way instead of posting it on Facebook so people don't go, bleh,
yeah.
Spare us.
Thank you.
You know?
Thank you, wife of the party.
Isn't it? So she's doing us a service.
Every once in a while, it's okay.
But she does her praise on the mirror.
Good.
So I used a lot of my DJ lighting, uplighting. We uplit the house. I'm still saying we.
You can still say okay. We. It's okay.
We uplit the house with green lights.
You aren't one person anymore.
Yeah. No, we can post the video and then...
Now, when you say we can post the video, do you mean me and you or
yes.
Do you mean you and your wife?
Me and you.
You're gonna have
you
to,
and I.
You're going to have to distinguish now between which we were talking
oh,
about.
Oh, boy. And then I have a projector and our garage door is white, so I projected music videos, like Halloween music videos.
Oh,
like
I didn't realize.
Thriller and Ghostbusters and things like that.
See, I thought that was just an added thing when I saw the pictures on Facebook.
I put Happy Halloween on there.
But did you write that? That was like in...
That was on a projector. So I made a a monogram.
Uh-huh.
And so basically...
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Way too much.
And I do monograms for weddings.
You've set the bar way too high already.
Well, yeah. But the idea is to kind of like, well, this is, look what this guy did. You know, I can do this for your party. I can uplight your house.
Sure, sure.
Wouldn't that be kind of cool to uplight your house for like a house party and have like a monogram on the... It's like, party's here. You know,
in case,
stuff like
in case you're wondering, it's the one with all the lights and the monogram on your garage door.
Exactly.
Good for you.
So maybe that's one way I can like upsell like house parties.
Sure.
I can uplight the outside of your house.
There you go. And put a dead guy on the second floor.
Exactly.
Just saying.
Hey,
just
dead guy.
Just saying.
So yeah, we had a good time. Did you do anything fun for Halloween?
Well, I handed out the candy to the kids. My wife took the niece trick-or-treating with her sister.
Okay.
Sister's pregnant. So I got...
Did they go trick-or-treating in your neighborhood or somewhere else?
They went in our neighborhood.
Okay.
And then I was in charge of transporting my kid, because my wife works super early, but my kid wanted to go and hang out with a girl. He's 15 years old. So we, of course, made him have another dude friend go with him. And this was pretty fascinating, because this girl that we... that he's been talking about, like, he knew her a couple of years ago.
Okay.
And then she moved away in this, you know, terrible teenage breakup romance.
No.
Why are our parents keeping us apart? Kind of thing.
But Facebook keeps us so close.
And, you know, so she's tried to hook back up with him a couple of times when she's come back to Utah to just visit. But she's always kind of sort of been flaky about it. So we thought, oh, all right, well, she's probably going to flake out again. You know, it's Halloween. She's probably got other stuff. And, you know, we asked my kid some of the things about her, and he's like, oh, well, you know, she flew in. She has a couple of private jets, and, you know,
she has private jets?
You know, so it's this whole thing, like, you know, these stories that kind of come across like unbelievable, where it's like, oh, my dad's an actor, and, you know, my mom, and all this stuff. And we're like, kid, you are being catfished. But he'd already met her, so, you know, it's not like... You know, he went to school with this girl a couple of years ago, but she legitimately, as far as we knew, moved away. And so, you know, I'm sort of being, you know, like any parent would be, a little skeptical. And we get the address of where she lives, and it's over kind of in a nicer area of the Salt Lake Valley. And I'm thinking, okay, well, you know.
Is she the daughter of the guy who's the manager for Justin Bieber?
No.
Who has that huge house in like Riverton Draper area?
No.
Okay.
But.
Okay.
So we go to the address, and even getting to the address and getting, you know, it's this this long kind of winding driveway, pulling up and seeing this massive house.
Yeah.
Still kind of thinking, all right, well, you know, she could have very well looked online for an address of...
You're still skeptical, you know, at this point.
I'm still a little skeptical, because we get there, and then my kid calls this girl and says, hey, we're here. And she's like, oh, I'm not there yet. Sorry.
Oh.
And so it's like, you know, is she playing us around? What's going on? So then 20 minutes go, which is how long she said, and we're like, you know, I'm sitting there like, all right. So 20 minutes go by, and he calls her, and she's like, oh, I'm still not there yet. I'm sorry. And it's like, okay. Well, you'll be here soon. Yeah, I'll be there soon. Sorry about that. So I am. I'm starting to get, again, skeptical. Yeah. Like, I kind of believed it, and then I was skeptical, and then I was getting more skeptical. So then, you know, a couple minutes later, she's like, oh, I'm just pulling up the driveway now. And then, you know, here's this girl.
Okay.
And I leave my kid with his friend, his buddy, dude friend, and this girl, right? And there's this huge party going on at this house.
Oh, really?
Now, this house is probably like 10,000 square feet on like 8 acres.
Okay.
And all the trees and all that stuff, probably a good $500,000 to $1 million just in itself.
Okay.
There's a place for a barn. There's an outdoor swimming pool and a bar next to the outdoor swimming pool.
Okay.
There's like acreage for horses to ride on and everything like that. And I'm thinking, oh, well, you know what? This is that's a pretty big lie. If this is, you know, you're going through a lot of work for this all to be a lie. But at that point, I just was like, you know what?
Was that her house?
Yeah.
And the party was going on without her?
Yeah. It was her mom. Her mom was throwing a party, and she just hadn't got...
Oh, okay.
So she just hadn't got home.
Jeez, why wasn't I DJing that party?
So,
or you?
That's a good question, right?
Yeah, jeez. Why weren't we DJing that party?
So, I go up, and I meet the mom, right?
Yes.
And she's like, oh, yeah, welcome to my home. I've owned it for 20 years now.
20 years.
And I said, oh, that's cool. you know? And she's like, yeah, we had to remodel it and update it and modernize it and everything like that. And I'm like, wow, this is unbelievable, because I knew that she wasn't married. I said, you know, so you've, you know, kind of come into this on your own. Here's the best part. One of the founders of Nu Skin.
Oh.
That's who this woman was. And that's who my buddy, or my kid, has become friends with, the daughter of Nu Skin. And he's just like, it's whatever. I don't care. Let's just go hang out.
Is she cute?
Yeah, she's way cute. She had a mohawk. She poked my kid's eyeball out with her mohawk.
Ew.
Just for her costume.
Okay. Wow, so one of the founders of Nu Skin.
Yeah, so it was just funny, because I totally was like, kid, let me tell you a story about a guy named Manti Te'o and what happened to him. Like, I wanted to, you know, sit down, but he's like, no.
It's almost too good to be true.
And so he goes and has a great time at the party, and then I drove him home. That was my Halloween.
Great.
Coming up in the later part of this, and by that I mean the second and third block here of the Cultural Hall, we are going to be visiting with the Purple Heart RMs. You can go to purpleheartrms.com. Plus, we have an LDS psychiatrist. If you loved episode 69, he's here, and he helps us along with this. It's about missionaries who come home early. I don't even want to phrase it that way, and you'll find out why, but it's about missionary service. We'll take that in the second and third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and joining us here is Ryan and Drew and Dr. Richard. Thanks for being back here. Now, if you are a lifer, or if you've listened to a lot of episodes of the Cultural Hall, you'll recognize the voice of Dr. Richard as the guy who we talked to in episode 69. It was the LDS psychiatrist.
Yes.
And so he's back here, and then also Rob, and yep. I am Richie T. Here's what spurned this whole episode. Let me read this email. Hey, I'm writing in behalf of a new site, purpleheartrms.com. It says, we are trying to raise awareness about missionary physical and mental health issues. We have a meeting set up with a GA and have some good connections that could help this make a difference. This is from Ryan. However, we need more stories and also responses to our survey about missionary health issues. If there is any way you guys could help get the word out, we would appreciate it. So that's the original email, and that's a couple weeks ago. So then we went, well, what is this Purple Heart RMs that these guys speak of? So we went to their website, and this is from the About Us at their section on that website. It says, we're just a small group of returned missionaries who thought, hey, why is it that injured military veterans are considered heroes, but injured early return missionaries are considered failures? Somebody should do something about this. Thus, Purple Heart RMs was conceived. We hope to open community discussion about missionary health issues. We're putting our stories and the stories of those who have bravely chosen to share out there. We hope you come away with a better understanding of what those who are injured or sick during their missions go through. We've taken several months to gather the ideas, goals, and content in the site, and are still gathering more. Special thanks to Paul Barker and Ron. That's the guys from Rational Faiths, right?
Yeah.
For their time, advice, and work, and thanks to all those who have shared their stories with us, Drew and Ryan. So here we go. Ready? We ready to jump in on this?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to take a stab in the dark, and I want to assume, wrongfully, I'm betting, that one of you guys came home from your mission early.
I did.
You did. Okay.
This is Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so Ryan, tell us, where did you serve? Tell us the story.
So I served about 4 years ago in St. Louis, Missouri. I left in January and returned in April, so it was only a few months.
Mm-hmm.
I came home for anxiety, depression, and migraine headaches.
Okay. Was it something that you'd experienced before, or was it something that the mission...
Yeah, some of these were pre-existing conditions. The depression had never been something I'd noticed up until that point. So,
so when you were, you know, when you say that you were depressed, let's talk about the depression. Like, how did you know that you were depressed? What were the things that were going on?
Yeah, I didn't talk about it with many people at the time. Missionary companion, we didn't have a good talking relationship.
We had one of those ones where it's like, I hate you. I'm stuck with you. All right, next day.
Let's pray. Let's study.
He said
let's
those
go.
Things. I, you know. Yeah. I was only saintly, I'm sure.
Yeah.
For me, I just realized that I was having some really dangerous thoughts. And
so, with like suicidal thoughts?
Yeah, there were some of those.
Okay. And what else was it? Was it just mainly that?
Yeah, I mean, it was something where I'd wake up and just felt really, really down, and that stayed through until I went to bed at night.
Mm. Some of that was,
and there was no getting away from it.
No,
the day.
Yeah, it wasn't. There didn't tend to be moments of relief. It was pretty constant.
And I imagine it would affect your work, right?
Yeah. It did. I tell people it's kind of hard to promote the plan of happiness when you don't look super happy yourself. You know, I believed it, but I couldn't really put on the smiles that I think, you know, investigators need to see.
Did it happen pretty quick? Like, did you start experiencing this stuff pretty quick?
MTC was really, really good for me. I didn't have problems there. It was once I got out there, within the first week and a half, that's when I started to kind of fall down that slope.
So, you say the MTC was really good. What do you think the difference or the change was, or was it just a duration then?
I think some of it for me, I probably tend to need structure. And the MTC for me, I felt like was really structured. My mission was more up in the air, as far as some days we would proselytize for hours and hours, and then other days we had a lesson, but they were pretty few and far between. So usually our calendar was, you know, from this time to this time tracking.
Sure. And the other part of that too is you're in St. Louis, so
yeah,
there's something mildly sort of
they're in the World Series.
Yeah. Thanks, Rob.
If that matters, right?
That's something to be happy
by the
about.
Time this airs, they may have lost or won.
So then you realize, hey, you know what? I'm not happy teaching a plan of happiness. You can't really talk to your companion. So what happens?
The plan of action after that?
Mostly, I didn't talk about my depression at all with any people. I was sent an analysis from the area medical advisor to kind of answer certain questions, and that helped determine that I had some pretty severe anxiety. But
what kind
mostly,
of questions are they?
Questions like,
do you hate this? Yeah.
Do you want to strangle your companion?
It was kind of about those questions of how many thoughts have you had about this subject or this subject, and
okay.
And you know, try to help analyze those things. But mostly on my mission, I think I was open about my headaches.
Mm-hmm.
That was easy to talk about. The depression was really hard, so I tried to keep that secretive.
And oftentimes you hear that people who suffer from mental illness are ashamed of it. And they don't know how to deal with it.
Absolutely.
So you get the you start to recognize, okay, this is a problem. You get the analysis, and then what's the next thing?
You know, I wasn't able to get really good treatment out there. I was in a ward with a lot of medical students, so mm-hmm. I was able to talk to them. But I think my companion was hesitant to go to doctors sometimes, and so
hesitant
it went
to
about,
go like with you, like he's like, we should be working, like that kind of thing.
Definitely that we should be working.
Yeah.
So it took about a few months. I ended up in the ER room on a day where we were supposed to have a zone conference, and it took about a week from then before they determined that I should be going home. So
you end up in the ER. How come?
For the headaches.
Okay.
Yeah, they just weren't going away. So.
So, Drew, let's get your story. Is it a similar story for you, or why are you involved at this?
You know, I didn't come home early. And a lot of people, when they see this site, they're like, oh, it's for just for people who came home early.
Mm-hmm.
But I had back problems for about a year and a half of my mission, and it kept getting worse. And it was something that could have been treated pretty easy early on.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't allowed to get an x-ray. I wasn't allowed to go to physical therapy. It was kind of just one of those, like, fast more and pray more,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get better.
Right.
And
go
don't go
mission?
To the doctor. Brazil.
Brazil. Okay.
Yeah.
And was your mission president from the States, or was he?
He was Brazilian.
He was Brazilian.
Native, yeah.
Okay. I have to ask. That gives me a little bit more context.
What mission in Brazil was it?
It's called Recife.
Okay.
Yep.
There's a temple there.
There is.
It's towards the.
It's the Recife temple.
It's kind of towards the nipple of Brazil.
I don't
know what you call it.
That's how I'll explain it from now on.
Yeah, exactly.
You just wanted to say the nipple of Brazil.
Exactly.
So a great deal of pain, but you made it through.
I did, but it's been over a year, and I'm still doing physical therapy. I can't run. I can't lift weights. I can't ski.
What
I'm
was the cause doing, of the?
Can't ski. That's sad. Pain.
That's pretty sad.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure. I think it was just walking around with a backpack.
Okay.
Honestly.
All right. And so, Richard, do you want to weigh in on this point, or should we wait a second?
Well, one of the important questions I'm helpful to answer is why now? Why, after years of these kinds of issues, people decide to make a website? Do you have any sense as to what led others like to see it in this perspective?
I think we're a lot more open on social networking than we used to be. It took a couple years for me to get in a place where I was comfortable talking about my mission. I was telling Drew, I really haven't told mission stories to friends and families. I don't do that. And so it took a couple years, and then now I think we've come together and said we've heard enough people who have had these problems, and especially where they've changed the mission age, which we're supportive of, absolutely. But I think we need to make sure that these younger missionaries are going out and they're well equipped. So.
It's an interesting thing talking about the missionary age change, and then hearing just kind of the mentality within the church that we think that faith can save everything,
right?
You know, faith and prayer and
but I think that would be coming from leadership primarily,
right? But I mean, the naivety of a younger person,
yes,
being like, okay, well, the leader, you know, yeah, a leader told me to.
God put doctors on earth to help us, and we're not using those resources.
But like Richard, like you pointed out, though, it is interesting that after thousands and thousands and thousands of missionaries, finally at this point there is a group of people who come forth and say, you know what, we're not, you know, as far as I can tell, you guys aren't bad people, you know, you're not, you know, heathens or anything like that. And so it's you know, we're faith believing.
It probably,
you know,
has something to do with increasing transparency in our society toward who we really are, and to not simply take on attributions of some particular identity that is culturally derived, such as if you serve 2 years, you are completing a real mission. The part, if not the majority of this problem, lies in the cultural perspective, not necessarily the direct of leaders function at the apostolic level, who see it differently and created missions with physicians, although you point out probably not enough where you and have continually tried to find ways of increasing. A huge initiative occurred in the 70s and in the 80s to improve health in missionaries with immunizations and how missionaries had access to water, kinds of things that occur. But it doesn't mean that it filters down to a culture predominantly focused on. And since performance is what we tend to look at as how we judge each other, whether you attend church, have read a scripture, or are able to do that, we are tragically, unfortunately, not sometimes seeing the individual. We are relegating people's worthiness to a form of, did you meet the criteria that was culture derived? So much of what this is based on are people's perceptions, families' perceptions, parents' perceptions, and some ecclesiastical leaders, which, as you know, are changed frequently but don't often carry all of the understanding other leaders, and simply saying, the important thing here is for you to get out, work. There ought to be some do this because I believe that if you were here, you were meant to be here.
How frequent is it, Richard, within the church, do you feel like situations like this where someone will go and then they'll come home and they'll feel kind of shunned and shamed? Do you have any sort of senses church-wide how that is?
Well, it used to be very common. More families are aware, not as judgmental or fear-based, return missionary. But this is a trauma. There's no way, this is not a trauma, but it's not only a trauma for the person, but it's a trauma. Family, the ward, and everyone is expecting. See, this is failed expectations. And under that circumstance, it's sort of like, how do we understand this? The more obscure the illness is, the more we're not sure it's a question of illness. We think it's a question of
And I think that we do that, I mean, as you said, I think that we do that to ourselves. I mean, how many times have you heard from the pulpit or, you know, in a general conference, the forget yourself and go to work, and this idea of, okay, well, this, you know, this illness or this depression, or maybe I'm just not working hard enough, I'm not feeling it, you know, I'm focused too much on myself, I need to take that without myself and go out and do it.
Right, and it is probably landmark, if not important talks given over the pulpit is the one given in conference, mental illness, and understanding that these are not chosen, don't go away simply by choice and worthiness, but require often different kinds of intervention. And some people suffer for long periods of time, innocent to scriptures or whatever we think the solution is in their own desire, an attempt to, it is insufficient. And this includes all kinds of illnesses, and things that we call obscure, like fibromyalgia, mm-hmm. or different kinds of headache pains, or all of various things. Probably the majority of these challenges that are more obscure are related to autonomic arousal, that is, the stress of the body in its attempt to accomplish the task. In our society, we have two challenges with anticipatory anxiety, over expectation, constant drive is required to complete tasks so that the performance has a large effect on how our bodies are responding.
One thing that stuck out to me in what you said is that you say it's very much a trauma. And it's a trauma on the person that comes home. It's a trauma on the family. It's very traumatic for the ward, even, stuff like that. How or what are, steps as an intervention? I'm sure that your family knew that you were coming home, you know, at some point knew that you were coming home. But
why don't you say, do you think that's true? I mean, did the two of you, what you experienced in part was traumatic?
Oh, I absolutely agree with everything you just said. I think that was really insightful. It was for me and my family and my ward, and a lot of them handled that trauma well, and were able to be proactive and helpful, and some weren't as able to do that.
Give me an idea from your experience, the people that you felt like were really helpful, what were some of the things that they did? And then conversely, the people that didn't handle it so well, what were some of the behaviors there for you?
Yeah, I think, and this is part of the reason I'm so excited about the Purple Heart RM's website, is that the people that were able to help me the most were the ones who I could relate to, who had been there. So as soon as I got back, about a week from the time I returned, someone from my ward who had been a past bishop and a really upstanding guy came over and said, I know you didn't know this, but I came home early for medical reasons as well. And he was able to talk to me and explain kind of what the implications were. And he just, ended with, we want you to get better. And that's what we're concerned about. And it wasn't a, when are you going back out? It was, mm-hmm. what can we do now to help you?
Yeah, because there is some of that too, where it's like, we want you to get better so you can get right back out there,
yeah.
and fight the good fight. So that was a good example of what someone did that was good. Give me some of the maybe not so great examples.
I guess the other example on the other side of the spectrum would be, I did have a girlfriend before I left. We weren't very serious.
Oh, no. I know where this is going.
Oh, no.
We weren't very serious, and I returned, and there were definitely a couple comments about that was the reason, which we didn't even date once I returned. It wasn't.
Well, she's not worth it.
Is it her or is it him, Rob?
I don't know. If she's going to judge him for that for the rest of his life, then it's
but
not
really,
worth it.
So much to the point that she's like, okay.
Oh, she was fine. Sorry, I should clarify there. It was people around me who knew of that relationship who were pointing to that as something that was the big reason.
You came home for her.
Right.
Oh. Right. Yeah, so watch it.
Oh, shoot.
Assume.
Sorry.
Well, jeez. But that has happened.
Oh, sure.
There's a number of times this relationship between a couple has been dissolved on the basis that the person...
Well, it's a checklist. Unfortunately, so much, isn't it? I mean, I say that sort of in jest, but...
No, I mean, I think... This is Ryan. I think as I went through the seminary program of the high school, that was something that the young women were told, make sure you marry someone who's an RM. Mm-hmm. And so the lines get a little blurry there, I guess.
I want to come back in the third block, and I want to talk about perhaps the most impossible thing, which is changing the paradigm of the church in general towards this thing we talked about, the checklist and everything like that. And so, Richard, I hope that you'll weigh in on that. That's coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. 7576 to book your shoot today.
All right, it's the third block of the Cultural Hall, visiting with, man, there's everyone in the world in this room. It's almost a full table. It is, if you count Janice. What's up, Janice? and people listening will go, who's Janice? And that's fine. Doesn't matter. I'm not going to explain it. She's over here, and I love looking at her as we talk about missionaries and missionary work. We got Ryan and Drew from Purple Heart RMs. We've got Richard, Dr. Richard, who he's our LDS psychiatrist, and it's me and Rob here talking about, you know, just missions, coming home from missions early, getting hurt on your mission. You guys mentioned in the email originally to me that you guys are working with the church, brethren within the church. Probably don't want to use names, but let's talk about kind of what's going on there.
Yeah. Well, part of this is we wanted to know.
This is Drew.
Yeah. We wanted to know exactly how big of a problem it was, if it was just us and some people.
It is. You guys
to.
Are alone in your problems.
Well,
I hope
just the two of you.
Yes. Dang it. No. So we had a guy, really nice guy. He made a donation, and we were able to do like a really well done survey, mm-hmm. and we sent that out. And so far, 500 people have responded. Mm-hmm. So that's 500 missionaries who had serious health problems on their mission took the survey.
Now, is that they had serious health problems and? And all of those folks came home? Or
no.
is it just
either they came, home either came home or just had something health happened.
So okay. What was in the survey? What kind of questions?
Where you served, what your injury was or your illness if you came home.
Mm-hmm. This is Ryan. A lot of it's qualitative, so some of it's very open-ended. How was your interaction with this person? What could have been better?
Yeah, with your mission doctor, with your companion, with your president. Mm-hmm. And we saw a lot of similar themes, like people who came home, just about half of them gave a homecoming talk. The other half weren't allowed to.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Weren't allowed to.
Or weren't offered the
opportunity.
I mean, I say weren't allowed, but who knows?
right.
And then some other stuff, you know, some of the doctors who are over these missions, this is in official church press releases. They take care of like 12 missions or so, and mm-hmm. literally thousands of missionaries are calling one doctor, you know? And so it's kind of hard to take care of 5,000 missionaries. I'm using.
Well, and especially over the phone, it's like, well, what have you got? Well, I'm coughing. Well, it's a cold. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
I got this guy, you know.
Drink
I got
some
another
water.
Call coming in. Yeah, drink
some
water. Pray a little bit and have a blessing.
Exactly. So we found a lot of really interesting stuff.
Is that
in
survey still something that people could take?
Absolutely. We have 500 or so responses, but we want 1,000.
Okay, so we'll link that here in the Cultural Hall. If you or someone you know kind of falls into those characteristics or whatever, well,
absolutely.
Feel free to take that or pass that along and so you can get that.
With the findings of the survey, are you giving this to the person that you're working with in the church to kind of let them know what is out there, what's going on? Is that
we definitely feel they'll be interested in it. So,
You know, it's an interesting experience that I had. I served a mission, served in Cleveland, served for 2 years. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, and I'm absolutely kidding. Richard just looked at me like, here we go. But one of the companions that I served with, in the time that we were together, he was diagnosed bipolar. A manic depressive. And I, you know, I'm at this point, I'm 19 and a half years old. And it was a lot of those things that, as you know, I hear you talk, I was the guy who unfortunately was like, come on, let's go. Let's just do it. I don't understand what's going on with you. Let's go. And I remember that at the point that he was diagnosed, someone sat down with me and said, you know what? You're not doing anything wrong by just being supportive to your companion. And so at that point, it was like, okay, well, then, you know, whatever we need to do. We got doctor's appointments. He had to get blood work done because there was some issues as to the medication was strong enough or something like that. But I remember I wish that more information would have been offered to me as his companion.
How because, to deal with him?
Yeah, because I didn't know. Like, I heard bipolar, and I was like, all right, he likes the North Pole, and he likes the South Pole. I mean, I wasn't that dumb, but pretty much.
Right.
To the point where, like, you know, I remember one time we were sitting around and we were talking, and then all of a sudden he just was like, ah, and he chucks a backpack against the wall, and I was like, I don't even know what, you know, I don't know how or what to do with this, but, you know, was educated and learned how and what was going on with him, and then could be empathetic to the situation that he was going through. Gathering these stories, and as you had stories come in, what are you finding that people are pretty similar to the situation that you had, Ryan, or is it all across the board.
Yeah, I think Drew had the example of an ecclesiastical problem, and we're definitely not saying that's the norm, especially with mission presidents. But there are definitely some common themes of these. You need to work harder. You need to pray and fast harder. And sometimes they were counterintuitive. I mean, for me, I knew whenever I fasted that these symptoms were more likely for me to strike with the headaches, at least. Mm. But my companion still wanted to do that. And mm-hmm. and so I think you're right. The information for the mission companions would be very helpful.
You know, it was interesting. Richard started talking to about it a little bit when we had the microphones turned off. He said it's very important that we distinguish between the when church. We say the church... the church itself is in its doctrine and the, you know, the heads of the church and then the culture. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, the church is what we normally think of as the hierarchical system of ecclesiastical authority that has organized patterns and rules and procedures as well as units like wards for all of us to function in. A culture really has to do with how we interpret that. Groups of people take particular ideas and perhaps in their own way interpret them that are potentially detrimental. The church itself is faced with an enormous responsibility, deception of the apostles of taking the gospel to the whole world. So this huge responsibility weighs on recent change with the 18-year-olds and 19-year-olds. Mm-hmm. There's an enormous growth, which the whole community celebrated. At the same time, the logistics of that change.
Everyone in the higher ups of the church went,
Well, it's enormous. We don't even start. But the point being is that they are then faced with the challenge of how do you deal with that many people out there and make that particular goal achievable and at the same time protect everyone who is potentially injured or, in other words, find themselves incapable at times of actually providing the service and function required. And so that balance is a moving target. Mm-hmm. Perhaps the physician numbers that are out there are too small, but these are all volunteers. So trying to get people to volunteer is a challenge when the numbers go up. It's also true that awareness of illness is often overlooked because we're so determined to complete the task. They are including mental health advisors out there now.
That is something that they're including within the mission is mental health advisors.
They're called area mental health advisors, and their job is to try to coordinate some of this. And
how long has that been going on for?
At least over 10 years.
Really? I had no idea. You had an experience with that?
Yeah, I did have someone that I was able to call up, and he was able to walk me through some meditations and things like that that were helpful.
But in the end, the issue comes down to can the missionary, under the rigors of the expected performance, function? So what they're trying to do is say, look, let's change the culture's view that a specific amount of time is required. Let's focus on the desire and motivation of the missionary to do all they can, and in the face of functional problem, whatever medical issue it is, that they may have an honorable release, even if it's after 3 months, mm-hmm. and go home and speak in their ward because their service is accepted. It's the whole concept of the rest. Whatever we do in the service of God has value, not judging us of time.
Oh, but it's got to be a certain amount of time. Jeez.
Yeah, right. The labor's in the vineyard.
Right. For at least 2 years. For at least 18 months.
Right. And I think that perception is still very much in the culture. I think what you're doing here at the Purple Hearts is extremely important. It's called awareness. The more people can be aware of these kinds of challenges, the more they know a lot differently about how much they prepare. Because it's important to go out prepared, not to just go out. And so we have to be physically and emotionally strong in order to do that, as well as having some spiritual dedication to that.
So from a mental aspect, and I can honestly say as I sit here, I've never thought being mentally prepared to serve a mission. Physically, I thought, I need my shirt, I need my shoes, I need, all that stuff, those physical needs. I think, okay, well, I got to be able to walk and talk to people. I thought about that before I went. But, I never thought, am I mentally prepared to be with someone 24 hours a day and handle rejection and be in a foreign place and stuff like that. So how does a person even prepare for something like that?
Well, one of the things that has recently happened is the leadership church has accepted the concept of stress, mm-hmm. as a way to help us begin to see that. I have right in front of me, it's called Adjusting to Mission. It just came out this year. Have 3 to 4 years of preparation. Its role is to help missionaries begin to be more aware of the condition, talk about it sooner, and return to hopefully a capacity to function because everyone around them is supporting. It's not a question of a person's poor motivation. It's a question of the challenges that a mission creates in the stress of the mission itself.
Does this book, Adjusting to Missionary Life, is this something that's issued to
Yeah, is it
to
in
people?
The MTC, or do you get it beforehand, Missionary
this
Prep?
This has just come out this year, and I think the timing with the increasing numbers is amazing. Over 100,000 have been sent throughout the world. They've been translated languages, messages back. People have turned to this and helped their companions ways and to better respond to some of the stressful experiences they're having. And if you catch it earlier, it's on.
That's an amazing resource.
Yes, and it's only part of at least 5 or 6 other interventions, including training the MTC, training with missionary companions, leaderships on training teams instead of simply seeing baptisms of individual efforts. Mm-hmm. Baptisms are always...
There's this part on here. It says 4 levels of stress.
Yeah, I flipped open to that.
Signs that you're at this level, and they have from green, yellow, orange, red.
I'm red.
Red being the worst. And then,
I'm red. I don't have time for this, Rob. I'm red.
And what I like, it has solutions. And so I imagine if a missionary is serious about dealing with this, he can look at the solutions as what to do if he gets to a red level that says, if you're at this level, contact your mission president for help. Ask
no,
for a blessing.
You respond when you start going into yellow.
Oh, okay. So even yellow. Nope. Don't get to red before you even start
Thank
to
Thank you.
Oh, okay. That's good. Good
Find
point.
A solution before you okay. get to
No, wait
red.
Till it just gets terrible and there's no way out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's an amazing resource. Now, is that something... A long time, are you familiar with kind of the genesis of that, Richard?
Yes.
As he smiles.
Yeah. Objection, I already knew the answer to that question. So how has that been, you know, coming about? Last couple years, a long time coming?
As I said, about 4 years. Mm-hmm. But it's because the church has made a great emphasis on ecclesiastical leaders to provide. The one thing they don't want is a missionary going out and being in harm's way. I mean, we had a diabetic who went out, and for all intents and purposes, he thought he was okay, but in about 2 months, he was getting into diabetic ketoacidosis, and the stress was always, we should keep the other hand.
I don't know what that is. What's
diabetic? That means that the blood sugars were just going sky high, and okay. He couldn't maintain those blood sugars. He had completely stable, but what people don't understand is that the stress of performance, relentless pace, and expectations of a mission don't allow for the usual coping strategies to be sufficient.
Hmm.
So in this case, it was important that he be given awareness of where his circumstances were, but not let him continue to be ill, not just because it's difficult for him, but it's difficult for everyone around. He needed to go home and reclaim his health. And we need not to put any stigma whatsoever on this. I mean, they'll always look at me and say, well, why would God send me? And I said, He sent you because it was critical for you to birth. No circumstance would he have ever said you cannot serve. Even though you may have difficulties, recognize the fact that you gave everything to make that part worthy to serve.
Did you guys get that message, Ryan, Drew, even despite your disabilities? Did you ever feel somebody was able to reassure you in that way?
I would have really liked that. But I didn't come home
I wish.
Early.
That sounds like...
So I think this is an excellent resource, and I hope more people have that attitude.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I don't think I had that same understanding attitude from some people. There definitely, I think, like you were saying, there has been a lot of progress made, though, culturally. So there are some people who definitely tried everything they could to remove that stigma.
Yeah. But don't stop, you guys. Keep more awareness, more understanding, more compassion, more sense of grace and mercy to everyone who outs everything they possibly can into this deserves to feel as though their service was accepted.
It's sort of, as I'm sitting here and I listen to both sides of it, it's kind of a bizarre dynamic in the statement, like, every worthy male should serve a mission. Like, I feel like that causes some to aspire to something that they maybe would not have done otherwise. And I, you know, or inspire, I guess, to do that thing. Or, you know, in those times when it, you know, maybe just was a tough time, not you know, a physical illness or a mental illness or something like that, but just genuinely a tough time to be able to inspire. But then there's also instances where it is, you know, a mental health thing or a physical health thing. And it just seems, it seems to me where it's such a tricky thing where it's like, okay, for those, this applies for all of you that need this for this reason, but not for this reason. And we want to be there on this, in this respect, but you know, we're not saying that you have to these, you know, does that make sense? So how can we do that then? Or what is,
well, just to, on the point of everyone having that desire is an enormous opportunity for our culture to define a Christ-like attitude to its members. So I think service is critical. Mm-hmm. And I think what we have tended to do is focus on proselyting and not service per se. Hopefully the concept of rescue will bring some of that back. So that we're all saying, if we're serving at the Church History Museum or we're Church History Library or,
oh, you mean one of those easy callings?
Well,
I'm kidding.
I work with those elders. I am telling you, these are, you don't even, no, get me into this.
No. I was
these
absolutely joking.
Incredible people serving in all kinds of ways. There is this information center out here in Jordan where there's 1,000 employees trying to support the church mission through information technology. And it requires all kinds of people, and there's a number of people serving missions there, volunteering and doing that as their mission, making enormous contributions to the church at large.
Hmm. Let's revisit a podcast we did maybe 2 months ago.
Okay.
With the lady who lived in Maine. Who engaged with a missionary online.
Sure.
And wasn't that missionary, he had a disability, right?
Yeah, he was not able to, for whatever reason, go and serve somewhere else.
And he was able to do proselyting through the website, I guess, and he was able to engage her, and she visited Utah to get baptized by him and his companion. And so
more of that will happen when every elder and sister has an iPad. And they will have it by the end of 2014.
So invest in Apple. That's kind of a side note.
I own like 10 shares. It's, yeah, $500 a share.
And they will, be doing blogging, and they will do a number of these kinds of things. And many people are much more willing to be accessible through media than they are through the door. Church understands that.
So are some of these missionaries who aren't going out in the field, are they serving here doing those type of,
absolutely,
proselyting, the online, the Skyping, the whatever?
Facebook? I mean, Facebook, we talked about.
It also includes helping people who are inactive, helping people who are wanting to go to the town. All kinds of ways we can provide support to the mission of conversion to the gospel, any way that it's seen as a service.
I think that you've said it a number of times, but it really just kind of dawned on me as you were talking again. It really just becomes now where we look at the idea of a mission as not what we have thought of it as, but just as serving.
Absolutely, because otherwise we discriminate.
Yeah.
If it has
one
to,
service is better than someone
be,
else's service,
if it has to be a foreign country in which I speak a foreign language and baptize 20 people, I would consider that a discriminating concern relative to what a mission is supposed to be, because that's an expectation that is unrealistic for the vast majority.
Which is an interesting thing, and I didn't think that we would go here, but I want to bring this up at this point, just in the idea of serving. Rob served in Spain, the Canary Islands, and I know in talking with you,
yeah,
there has been at least, you know, feeling like for me, and I'd like to consider myself your best friend.
Yeah.
Talking about...
other than my wife.
Yeah. No, you know what? I'm your best friend, okay?
Oh, okay.
Who's known you longer? Me.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
but, you know, some sort
don't
of...
Don't make them companions, yeah, please.
But some sort of almost in the way that you've talked about your mission sometimes, in some ways that you feel like it was a failure or a waste of time.
Oh, yeah. It was ineffective. I don't think it was a waste of time. It was ineffective. That's my big point about my mission. Just the way we did missionary work out there, it was, as I would say in Spanish, ineficaz, because we were going from door to door and just wasn't effective. So I think instead of sending a bunch of missionaries out to some remote island where everybody's Catholic and they don't want to talk to you, you got to figure out different ways, because everybody was sticking to the status quo, which was going door to door, knocking on doors.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to figure out different ways to preach to different cultures, either it be through English classes, service, those type of things. And in my mission, luckily, I have a positive attitude, so I just
I had more fun on my mission, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to make the mission more of a... I wanted to dive into the culture, and that's what I'd be able to get to know the people.
But let's go back. So what would you advise young men who anticipate going on a mission as a better perspective as they think about it, and what helpful in their preparation?
Yeah.
I think just be open with yourself, with your parents, with your leaders about your limitations. If you feel like you have a problem, you need to talk about it and make sure it gets treated. I saw that a lot on my mission. Missionaries, including me, we were scared to talk about our sicknesses because people would judge us for it, you know. And I was scared to talk to my family about it just because I was kind of told not to, or to always be super positive in my emails and stuff. So it kind of became an internal thing, which makes it a lot worse. And I feel like even before the mission, if you're very realistic,
what is
help.
The fear? Why would you be given that advice? What is the fear behind that?
Fear behind the advice for the emails?
Fear, yeah. Don't talk about anything else. It's positive. Don't talk
this
about
anything. This is Ryan. I think that's mostly to make sure you don't scare anyone else out of a mission, right? That's at least
so
how
you
I...
aren't afraid to go on a mission so that you complete it in a certain prescribed. And unfortunately, it really doesn't serve us. Most everyone that I ever talked to, 100% dedicated to make this. The idea that we really are looking for someone to give us an excuse out is very, what we need is openness to succeed, not, you know, conceal and get through.
I don't know if I can ask you this, but I'm going to. Do you think anywhere down the road that they're going to open the lines of communication? I guess you can email, but even more than 2 phone calls a year. I remember I broke the rules a lot and called my parents, but that gave me...
That's because you're a mama's boy, though.
Yeah, that too.
Oh, Mom, I miss your Jell-O salad
but
on
But
Sunday.
It really helped me as far as my mental health. I would imagine I was able to talk things out. When the missionaries died on my mission, I was able to call my parents and say, I wasn't one of those missionaries who died, but this is what we're dealing with and how to work with it. Those type of things. Do you see that coming in the church?
The evolution is already taking place. It's pretty hard to control. We all have an iPad. Think about times on a P-Day where someone is emailing their parents and their parents get online right at the same time, and so they're having a virtual conversation.
Right.
And
I will not be sending you a letter at 1:30 on Monday. Here we are.
Well, I have not seen that that's done anything but help.
So let me ask you this then. Let's speculate. Why is that set up? As a rule, up to this point, as a missionary rule, up until this point.
The phone call?
Yeah, the phone call thing.
Tell me.
No, I want you to speculate, pal. No?
You know, tradition has its own speculators, but the fact of the matter is it's a form of tradition. And I don't know that as time goes on, those kind of things will remain in the face of what is really required, and that is everything we have to make this. Parents are so dedicated to support their kids. Most of the time, it's not a distraction.
It's interesting for me, though. I actually appreciated that I didn't have to talk to my family, which isn't to say that I don't like my family, because I love them a great deal. But like my family has a great way about getting you involved in what's going on, and I needed to not have that in order to what I feel to be able to just focus on what was going on. Because there were
Richie,
a couple
I think
of,
you're assertive enough to have been able to tell your parents that yeah. at some point on your mission.
Sure. But you know,
you
in
didn't
the
need a rule.
But in the times that I guess that's true. I guess I just would have been able to say,
yeah.
you know what, I'm losing focus and I need to
The first 3 months the transition is critical and a bit of support is very helpful. By the time you get to a year, most missionaries really have started to really focus on the mission. And the past of their family tends to fade. They're always complaining at that point. Why aren't they session?
Mm-hmm.
It's because they finally have gotten engaged. So I think it's a natural evolution. Time, it really is not about the family. So I don't think we need to be afraid, long run, that supportive interventions and missionaries with their families is likely to be beneficial.
Hmm.
I mean, there's always people who tend to have difficulty with these things, but it shouldn't affect the majority.
Drew, you kind of weighed in on what you feel like missionaries that are going out there preparing. What about you, Ryan? Do you have anything additional to what he was saying?
How to prepare?
Yeah,
I think just being open to take a deep self-analysis and see what your strengths and weaknesses are, and be honest about that.
Do you think that if you would have done that, that the results would have been different for you?
I think one of the things that probably would have helped me is to have gone off to a university or something like that, where I had had that support system taken away a little bit. But up until that point, I hadn't, and so I wasn't used to that experience. So maybe something.
Which is a huge thing for now missionaries going, hey, I just got my diploma, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, flying off on the plane.
There is some evidence that individuals who have had at least 1 to 2 years of experience past high school have confidence and feel more comfortable in missions than those who go to school.
Yeah, because you've been living at home all your life.
Right.
And now you are put into this situation. I even went to a quarter of college, you know, and I thought that was helpful for me. And I now all my friends that went to like a year of college thought it was very helpful before they went on the missions. Living with roommates, learning how to cook for yourself, knowing how to do your own laundry, those type of things.
But now where the stigma, because with the age change comes a stigma of now everyone should kind of be doing it. We've read it in here in the cultural hall talking about how there's this culture at BYU for the women now, whereas before it was like, oh, we can put it off till 21. You know, maybe if I'm around, I can go serve a mission. And now it's you can't go? It's only 19.
Well, these incredible young men, Ryan and Drew, are here to squash stigma. Let's not start a new stigma.
Yeah.
About 19-year-old women have to go.
Right. And it's just an awareness or a conversation that I think needs to be taking place, and definitely what these guys here are doing with the Purple Heart RMs. I think that's to me, though, as I sit and think about it, I just think, man, you know what? We do so much of this to ourselves. If we could just recognize the power of, you know, what we say or our attitudes, instead of trying to put ourselves as another person, I think we really do a lot of damage to ourselves and the church, you know, because how many missionaries have come home early because they either hurt themselves or, you know, they had something that they were dealing with mentally, and then said, you know what, I didn't get the support I needed, forget it, I'm out of here, I don't want to do this anymore.
So my question for you guys is, what do you foresee the Purple Heart RMs doing? Do you guys want to have like a summit, conference, education just through the website? What do you guys see for the future of your group?
I see it kind of twofold, both as just a support system, like helping people one-on-one who deal with this stuff, but also hopefully provoking some change in the way people are trained. Like we've talked about, like companions, mission presidents, who really, they have no medical experience or training at all, most of them. And now they're in charge of 200 missionaries and to determine whether or not they can do stuff. So both just as like a support group and as some more training from a professional side as well.
Do you guys have like a Facebook forum? Are you guys looking to do stuff like that?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page up. It's not quite a forum yet, but we do have some discussion there. And you can find that on the site. Okay. It links from there.
What about for you, Ryan? What do you see coming from all this?
Yeah, I mean, we're not the only ones that are looking at this issue, as has been mentioned. And I think we'll work in collaboration with others who are trying to, you know, bring this issue up. There's also a research going on at UVU right now about early return missionaries, and we're hoping to work with them a little bit. And I would love to see some forums. I know there's been talk of maybe an Education Week presentation or something
cool
like that. That would be helpful.
Are there other groups like the Purple Heart RMs? Name something else that exists out there that you guys are aware of?
UVU, yeah, a professor there is working on research.
Doing research, but it's not necessarily like a group with a website or anything like that.
They actually do have a website, and they have gone to certain stakes and done some training with the stake
leaders. Do you
know
the website?
Earlyreturnmissionaries.wordpress.com.
Okay.
Should be the website.
Yeah. So that's for not just health issues, but for any reason, I think.
Yeah, because that's a whole different podcast coming home for other issues besides health and health and mental health issues. Richard, any last closing thoughts on this thing?
Missionary work is extraordinary, and it's amazing that the LDS community has embraced it with such vigor and enthusiasm. Think about what it accomplishes in the rite of passage toward a more adult sense of self, but a dedication to a sense of self in the service of God is an amazing accomplishment. It's going to come with certain downsides because our enthusiasm sometimes overreaches our wisdom. But it's the kind of balance the brethren have brought to keep reminding us that it is a point in time, that the time is not the issue, it's the process and the opportunity, and clearly more preparation is always to the advantage of someone who seeks this opportunity.
You know, you mentioned brethren. Are there sisters that are reaching out to you guys as well, sisters who have come home early and shared their stories as well?
We just posted one today, and it's super positive. She's a great girl. She's Relief Society president in her ward now. She hasn't been home for over a year. And but just,
what do you
really
mean,
great.
Posted on the Facebook or on
yeah, on
the
Facebook page and on the website.
Okay,
Which is purpleheartrms.com,
and then Facebook. You can either go to the website and find the Facebook link, or it's just facebook.com/purpleheartrms.
Anything else, Rob?
I think this is a good thing that people should be aware of. If you know people that are out there that are suffering or preparing to go on a mission, direct them towards this. And I'm just wondering, adjusting to missionary life, can somebody get this at the distribution center?
Yes.
Okay, and so this would be a good tool for people that are preparing for missions.
Yeah, many bishops and stake presidents are now using this as part of their course material.
It looks like it's about a 50-60 page kind of pamphlet book that pick up.
It should be standard. I remember taking Missionary Prep Institute before my mission.
It should be a supplemental guide to it.
Yeah.
50.
Yeah, see? Look at that. I eyeballed 50 right there.
There you go.
We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body.
We hope that if you are sick or afflicted, that you'll be able to join us next week.
And in the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you.
On the back row.
Up the cultural hall. Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat.